The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, welcome back again here on The Back Page. I'm Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have again from Ladbrokes, Declan Maron. Declan, how are you doing?
Good.
Bernard Flynn from The Mirror and double All-Ireland winner. How are you?
Great, Shane. Good to see you.
You too. And Paul O'Hare from The Mirror. Welcome back. We haven't seen you in a while.
Good, man. Cheers, Shane. Yeah, been hiding under a rock.
Have you, yeah? And what have you found under there?
That's lots of League of Ireland and Ireland international stuff and bits and bobs. So
you were away there last week. You went on a little trip with your wife, didn't you?
I did. I went to Madrid. Left the three kids at home. Yeah.
How did that go? What did you do? Did you go see the sights? That kind of stuff.
I did a bit of that. Bit of wandering around. Probably put on about a stone in weight from the tapas. You know, deceptively filling little gets that there, but yeah, it was great.
And there's probably no way like you'd take your wife away and try and get her to do that and to do with sports, seeing as it dominates your life.
It was a clean break from all of that type of stuff. So on Saturday morning, I told her I was going to the Bernabeu to watch Levante.
Right,
Madrid.
Touch of class from you. And what did she say? She obviously said, "That's a great idea, Paul. Let's do that. You never talk about soccer."
Rolled her eyes a little bit, but
took your credit card and went shopping.
Well, kind of went pottering around anyway. But yeah, it was a handy one because it was a 1 o'clock kickoff, so it actually worked out really nicely. And I hadn't been to Madrid before,
so you were doing her a favour in a way.
Pretty much, just getting out of her hair for a while. It was a 1 o'clock kickoff, and I hadn't been to the Bernabeu before. Sort of travel around a bit with the job, but I hadn't quite ever hit Madrid and didn't realise that the stadium is pretty central to the city centre. Mm. So 1 o'clock kickoff, be rude not to, cheap enough tickets that you could pick up. And then they were 2-0 down after 13 minutes.
Against Levante, was it?
Levante, yeah, the mighty Levante, once of Ian Hart fame.
Right, okay. So Real Madrid, all at sea under Julian Lopetegui. I wasn't going to start with this, but of course now we're on Real Madrid. So like, there's a Clásico this weekend. There's the Champions League, obviously they won during the week as well, but where are they at? Do they look disjointed? They're on 11 sports, so nobody sees them anymore, really.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. They certainly seem to be a little bit all at sea. You kind of wonder, during the week, they beat the Czech team, isn't it? Victoria Plzeň. Mm. They beat them in the Champions League, sort of to get back and win in ways as such. But I guess, you know, there's all sorts of talk about the club are already meeting, you know, prospective new managers. Antonio Conte has been named. But it's a slightly tricky one for the club because if they don't do something in the next 24 or 48 hours ahead of El Clásico, and if Lopetegui goes and they actually beat Barcelona in that game, then they're really between a rock and a hard place in terms of what do they do.
You wouldn't know? Be like Madrid, would it, to go and tap up a manager like that?
No.
Just off the back of getting Lopetegui in from his Spain job.
It's crazy, like, just when you think about the Clásico, it's going to be the first Clásico to feature neither Messi nor Ronaldo since December 2007. And like that was a game with like Deco and Zambrata and Heinze and Ruud van Nistelrooy. So it's that long. But like, if you think about this Real Madrid team, they've got the likes of Gareth Bale, Isco, Asensio, Benzema. But they don't have a poacher anymore that Ronaldo's gone. And even Morata, the much maligned Morata as well. They just don't have a poacher anymore. Is that why, you know, having gone from scoring 73 consecutive games last year, which was a record or an equal record, they've already been scoreless four times this year.
I think their game was so built around setting Ronaldo up for so many years that then asking them all the exact same players to then switch out of that and go, now you do your own thing, is nearly impossible. Once you've got a system in place that's worked, it's worked really well for them, and then to take one element of it and go, well, go as you were, just not with him, it's not going to work. They needed probably a new player or two to sort of spark a bit of revival. It's probably what you'd say about Barcelona, in a sense, when they brought in Coutinho. They're not as reliant on Suarez, who seems to be dipping off a little bit now. There's another couple of players in there to freshen it up. But I think that's pretty much it on Madrid's.
Yeah. Just looking at the Spanish league table here, like league games only, Madrid are in seventh place, and they're only 4 points off Barcelona at the top, but they've scored just 13 league goals in 9 matches compared to Barcelona's 23 goals in the same amount of games.
And Messi's after breaking his arm, he broke it against Sevilla in the 4-2 win. Yeah. Like, does anyone even realise that the Clásico is going on this weekend now that La Liga's on 11 sports? It feels like...
You have to remind me, I nearly forgot. Yeah.
It's nearly like United a little bit, like they're so far down the table, but it's obvious to me, I mean, do the players actually believe in this new manager? I don't think so. But secondly, if you look at it and you're actually watching, I just looked on social media very strongly, and Paul, you'd know this more than me, there seems to be a strong rumour that's out there that they could be sacked before the weekend. That's what they're actually saying. I think they have to sack him before the weekend or leave him there for a while.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier, like in terms of if they don't do it before the Clasico and Madrid win the match.
Do you not think it's a case of, though, they know this game's a write-off? I mean, looking at the betting, say Barcelona are 19-20, 27-10 about the draw, 5-2 about Madrid is probably the biggest price you'll have on this game in a long time. Do you think there's an element of Real know they're getting beaten here, they're not going to be able to turn it around that quickly?
No, Messi,
let Lopetegui take this beating, and that's when we get rid of him.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's a sort of a gimme, you know. I think there's plenty to play for Madrid there. Like, they are only 4 points off the top of the table. They win that game, they're a point behind Barcelona, and it's, you know, whether they continue with Lopetegui or not, you know, their season certainly isn't over after 9 matches.
They've scored one goal in the last 4 games, yeah. And you were there for it. Who scored it?
Oh God, Benzema, was it?
No, Marcelo. No,
Marcelo.
Were you watching it all? So you left your wife for hours and you'd been paying attention.
He never went there at all.
No, I knew, because I was reading Marca, the Spanish paper. Not
you speak Spanish?
No, I
didn't. Right.
I don't. No,
I was staring at the page.
Well, actually, translator with him.
I did buy the newspaper the following day. Yeah. I don't speak a word of Spanish, just because I was interested in the layout and what they did, and they had 16 pages on the match, like,
right,
16 tabloids on one match. Yeah,
and we'll never know what a word of it said.
No, but I knew going to the game that I think they had until the 55th minute that they had to score, otherwise it would become a club record for the longest amount of time they haven't conceded. And when Marcelo scored the goal, there was a bit of a sort of a muted round of applause. All right, I think that the Madrid fans seem pretty pissed off that they were 2-0 down so quick. But in fairness to them, they threw the proverbial kitchen sink at them. I think they hit the crossbar 2 or 3 times, and the fans certainly seemed to be appreciative of the fight back, but falling short.
And it's just so hard to say whether Lopetegui deserves more time or not, because we just don't see them on 11 Sports. I don't have a subscription. I don't know if any of you do. But just to talk about a couple of the other teams that are also in the Champions League, I know we mentioned the Clásico, but Juventus, and again, just because it ties into Real Madrid, I saw a stat when I was in London during the week, and I saw a stat in one of the papers there saying Ronaldo averaged more than a goal per game in each of his 9 seasons with Real Madrid, bar his first season where he averaged 0.97 goals per game. So he was almost there. Like, do you think he can kick on and drive Juventus to a Champions League title after, you know, they beat United, a fairly insipid United 1-0 this week?
If there's anyone that could, it'd probably be him. I mean, are they 11 finals and 9 of them lost or something like that from Juventus?
9-7, I think, isn't it?
9-7, right, yeah. Something like that. Just looking at the overall betting for it, Man City at 4-1, Barcelona 5-1, Juventus 11-2, Bayern and Liverpool then add 8-1. It's about 9-1 or bigger the rest for teams in this. It's a funny old, 3 matches in now to these Champions League groups. I would have looked at it as in, I can't see anyone outside maybe that top three winning it. I think it's very difficult. You need a sort of team to go on a Liverpool 2005 run with a sort of cobbled together team and tactically sound. I don't think most of the teams below City, Barcelona and Juventus, and maybe Liverpool too, to be fair, considering they were finalists last year and have strengthened, look like they'd have much of a shout at winning.
Wouldn't put bad money on Bayern Munich. They've been all over the shop with Niko Kovac.
I think you look, as you said, say the numbers, the names you've picked there, Bayern, Real, Atletico got trashed the other night, PSG don't look up to it, and then you're talking getting into Dortmund, Napoli, Man United, and they're probably still a little bit off the pace.
Man United showing up like late again with the bus. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. 2 games in a row, and Lukaku...
He didn't make a sub at all, did he? Mourinho over that whole game, which seems very strange considering.
And like Lukaku talking about his goal drought, and he was asked, said, I don't know. With Belgium, I've been playing for 10 years since I was 16. Players know me much more. Here, I still think my teamwork between myself and my teammates can improve and be much better. It's something that we're working on. The players need to know me and my movement. When that starts clicking, I think the results I have with Belgium would also come here. Talk about passing the buck. He's been there like 15 months or something.
Need to know my movement. Like, to me, looking at Lukaku, he just looks like he's got bigger. And I don't necessarily mean heavier or fatter. He just looks like he's too... bulked up.
That's Mourinho,
like
though,
a Kildare footballer under a geezer.
That's Mourinho, though, isn't it? Because Mourinho loves that. He just loves one big lump up top. He'd chuck Fellaini up there if he could, I'd say. But there's a feeling that Lukaku's maybe closer to Heskey than he is Drogba. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's not really this kind of.
Just watching the other night, it's just something. As a United fan, I've said here a few times before. If you look at his first touch at that level. And I watched the other night, the balls that actually hopped off him, that didn't stick, his first touch, for a top forward at that level, I thought he was very, very poor. And I think he's too bulky. His agility is not there. The actual agility for to make the ball stick and turn. The arc that he's turning is too... It's actually, he needs too much space to actually turn at that level. But his first touch, I thought, was terrible. But Declan, to make no substitutions at a night they were crying out for something. Juventus' defence was excellent, I thought. Brilliant. One of the best performances, particularly, you know, in the back four. It was unbelievable. And they couldn't penetrate. And he did nothing.
You'd be looking very desperate now to take 40-1 about Manchester United in the Champions League. They look well out of it at this stage. Two to note, actually, who are probably maybe a little bit overpriced given the few we sort of dismissed there, Napoli and Dortmund, considering Dortmund just subjected Atletico to their highest ever defeat under Diego Simeone. They haven't had anywhere near that. And Napoli, for anyone who watched them against Liverpool and then PSG's since then, they're going to be banged there under Carlo Ancelotti. They're a very tough team. They're tactically really probably of all the teams there at the moment tactically the most sound in terms of defensive football, so look
the
really,
game
really
the game against PSG, I only saw the highlights of it, but it looked like a really good a great game, but it kind of sums up PSG in that when it comes to the bigger tests they're just not at it, you know.
Just one final point about United as well, there's talk about like what they're like in transition, getting from back to front even when they win the ball back. Having Matic in midfield, he's not exactly going to pass the ball forward for you. Mata, like, really good with the ball at his feet, but doesn't move around the place that well. And who else do we have in midfield after that? Maybe the likes
Fred
of Fellaini.
Fred
seems to be getting no hop off the manager at all. Was it 50 million and sitting on the bench?
Well, that's the problem with United. They've just bought so much dead wood and they're on big contracts.
Under Herrera as well. Like, he's brought in as a man marker against the likes of Hazard at times as well.
But, like, you know, Mourinho wants to have sort of, you know, defensively solid players in his team, even sort of Martial and Rashford to an extent are expected to sort of chip in with all that type of thing. But if that's your kind of philosophy that you want a defensive team, he's a team of defenders there who can't defend. So why can't you just, you know, the crowd want attack, 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 you know.
Did you see Rashford against Spain? The way he actually played, to see the way he got on the ball offensively and the pace and the angles of running, it was unbelievable. To see him with United, the way he was played tactically, I mean, he has it. But they're not getting... Martial the other night again, mother of God, I mean, he did nothing to change it up. He's so inconsistent. There is... Listen, we've said it. I said it to you earlier on the podcast a number of weeks ago. He will be sacked.
Just before we move on to some other football, just to flag up one or two for the Clásico, because, as I said, Coutinho looks to be one of the main men in there at the moment. Without Messi, I think he flourishes 6-1 to get the first goal, which is pretty good value considering you're going to have Suarez and all of them a lot shorter, Bale and a few more of them. It's the kind of game, I actually think Barca win this very well. I think Madrid look a bit of a mess, even though Barca don't look perfect themselves, but they should win this well. Barca and over 1.5 goals, you get an odds against price of 5-4. So rather than taking the match betting of odds on price, get on the 5-4 for Barca and over 1.5.
You'd expect a heavy odds on price for Liverpool against Cardiff Saturday at 3 o'clock.
And you have
it. Yeah, like Liverpool have dropped just 4 points in the league all season, whereas Cardiff have collected just 5. At the same time with Liverpool, it doesn't look like they're flowing particularly well. They seem a little bit turgid. Like Salah, even with his muted celebrations the other night as well, doesn't look like a guy who's absolutely delighted with himself. Mane diving for that penalty and then missing another penalty. Yeah, but like, there's just something about, it's incredible that their results are so good. They're top of their group in the Champions League. They're second in the league, only on goal difference as well. Why aren't they actually, what's wrong with them that they're not actually playing that well?
I don't think I think they're playing okay. I think they're playing within themselves and I think they're only going to get better. They're what, level on points with Man City? They're not playing brilliant, as we're saying. They have obviously the Fab Four or whatever we want to call them in terms up top, but you know, there's sort of new dimensions to that team. They're winning games ugly, they're winning games 1-0, that, you know, games that cost them dearly in the past few seasons. They've shored up their defence, which was leaky. I saw a stat during the week about after 9 games last season, they conceded 16 goals, whereas they've only conceded 3 this season, you know, in the league. So that was problem number one for them in the last couple of seasons. They've sorted that out. I think Liverpool, I still expect Man City to win the title relatively comfortably. I still think they could probably win it by 8-9 points, but I still think there's a lot more to come from Liverpool, and I wouldn't be too worried in terms of, you know, people question Salah's form. I know he scored a couple of goals in the last few games. I still think there's plenty to come from Liverpool.
I think you can't judge them on last season's attacking performance unless you're going to take the defence into it as well. As Paul said there, like, everyone's kind of going on about Mane, Firmino and Salah. They're probably not miles off what they've been doing. As you said, that in terms of going all out attack, the team doesn't play like that anymore now. They control games a lot more rather than get from start to finish very, very quickly. They seem to be happy to get midfielders on the ball, whereas they weren't before. They seem to be happy to get defenders on the ball, whereas they weren't before. They wanted nothing to do with the two lads, yeah, or the four lads at the back most of the time, or the keeper for all that.
You look at Shaqiri as well, who's sort of come in and done his bit off the bench, or some games he started in. And was it Gary Neville who was pretty critical of him?
Charlie Adam
season?
Massively was.
Yeah, when he was at Stoke, I think he was calling him unprofessional and that he waddles around pitches and all
from
that.
Charlie Adam.
I tell you what, any Man United fan, I would imagine, would happily swap a Shaqiri for a Sanchez right now.
12.5 million
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, yeah, it was a clever little boy.
He played central midfield, or part of the midfield trio against Red Star, and he had a couple of unbelievable passes. The first one for that set Robertson down the towards the end line, which was cut back for Firmino to finish. And then the way he cushioned the ball for Salah's goal with his right foot as well. Yeah. Just that touch of class. What about Fabinho? Do you think he's finally settled in?
He fairly chucks himself into a challenge, doesn't he?
Yeah, no harm.
No, yeah.
But can he play a bit?
I don't know yet. You know, he's been there for, you know, he's been there for a while now, and he hasn't played a huge amount of games, but he seems to be steadily improving, all right. But I only saw highlights of the game, but I'd be questioning some of his tackling techniques. it was reasonably efficient at times, but he's a red card waiting to happen.
I tell you what, though, they did miss a bit of that last season at times as well. I talked, I think, a couple of times last year about how often the defenders would head away and Liverpool would lose the second ball and they'd immediately be on the back foot. So, now, mind you, headers is going to be a big thing against Cardiff, you would think. 1-9 for Liverpool here, 17-2 to draw, and 28-1 for Cardiff to win it.
Yeah, it's going to be a very different game for Liverpool.
It's going to be 4-0, isn't it?
It's a Neil. Yeah, it's probably it's a Neil Warnock Cardiff. Yeah. Like, they're going to burn their shin guard. You're going to need your shin guard. Yeah.
Last season's game like this, you'd be thinking Liverpool minus 2 on the handicap, but you're thinking maybe a little bit. You'd be thinking they go 4-5, but I'd be closer to 2-0 now or something like that. I think 2-0 is about...
Cardiff come into it on the back of a win as well. They did a good win over Fulham. I think they doubled their goal tally for the season, 4-2 win over Fulham. So they come into it in a bit of form, but I still expect a very comfortable day for Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool and over 3.5 goals is even. So even if it was like 3-1 or something like that, I could see Liverpool getting plenty here, and even if they concede, I think that would come in.
I think they're getting solid enough where they don't concede. This is, as you said, they're kind of not scrappy games. They're somewhat controlled. They don't look in danger. But you have Liverpool 2-0, about 11-2 there, which I think looks fairly solid price. I can imagine just you know, dawdling around with the ball quite a lot in this game as well.
Arsenal have been unbelievable. They're away to Crystal Palace this weekend. They've won 10 games in a row in all competitions, 7 league games in a row. It's first time since 2007 that they've won 10 in a row, and like some beautiful goals. I mean, we saw against Leicester the other night.
That was magnificent.
Oh, incredible team play. And like, even if you think of Ramsey's goal against Fulham recently as well, just beautiful play that Wenger was supposed to produce for the team, but Emery is doing it, plus they've got a bit of backbone. And I was looking at the stats of their last 7 games. They've been drawn in the league. They've been drawing them all at half time, but the aggregate scoreline for the second half is 16 goals to 2, which is absolutely outrageous. So it was 4-4 in the first halves of those 7 games.
Well,
16-2 in the second half.
Something like half-time draw, full-time Arsenal then is somewhere you'd be thinking for something like that.
As impressive as it is, because I watched the game on Monday against Leicester, and I did go looking for a price for Arsenal to finish, you know, to finish second in the league, basically, to Man City. And I think at one stage I saw a price, even when they were 2-1 or 2-1 up or something, I think I saw a price of about 18-1, and then after the game it was sort of knocked down to about 6-1. But as impressive as the turnaround seems to be in a relatively quick period of time, that run of games that they've had, like, who have they beaten really? Like,
West Ham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Everton, Watford, Fulham, Leicester. So you're 100% on the ball.
Do you know what I mean?
After this game against Palace, they're home to Liverpool, so that's the real test.
Like, they started the season with
Chelsea and City.
Chelsea and City, that's it. And they looked all at sea a little bit. And that can be a truer reflection of where they're at, or it can also be a true reflection of a team with a new manager, and you can forgive them those games. But I'd still like to see them beat a couple of decent teams before we get too carried away about them.
Yeah, a couple of different markets. I will give you the match betting first. 3-1 Palace, which is big enough. 11-4 the draw, and 4-5 about Arsenal. As you said, you wouldn't expect Arsenal's run to be coming to an end in this game. You'd maybe be thinking down the line at Liverpool. I could see Arsenal winning to nil, maybe 13-5, which isn't too bad a price considering they're 4-5 as an odds on. Arsenal to win in over 2.5 goals at 31-20 probably seems more likely. You're not banking on them holding on to a clean sheet. And Lacazette is obviously in some really good form at the moment. He's starting over Aubameyang more often than not, so he's 4-1 to get the first goal. We're going to double the odds on that one, and plenty more of those games this weekend actually if your player scores in the first 20. So if they get an early one, you're looking at about 8-1 on Aubameyang.
Aubameyang looks hot enough as well. I know I went heavy on that stat about their second half scorelines, but if you do fancy Arsenal from the start, Arsenal halftime full time is 19-10, so not far off 2-1. Why has nobody bought Zaha yet? Surely some of the big
United.
I know he went to United, but that was under Moyes, and surely everyone would say, fair enough, that was under a disjointed team. Imagine him with Spurs or Liverpool or even Arsenal.
Yeah. Who was it? Somebody did try and buy him.
Spurs, I think, were after him
for a while.
They'll probably get him as part of the Daniel Levy transfer plan. About 3 years later, they'll get him.
Yeah.
Speaking of Daniel Levy, Tottenham are at home to Man City on Monday. Like, you know the way with Spurs there was talk that they're not the same team as last year. They haven't bought players, etc., etc. But they're 2 points off the top after a summer where they spent no money. Stadium's still unfinished, so there'd be a bit of rancor about that. They've had injuries, form, and like 2 points off the top, but 6 of their 9 games so far have been away from home. So they're actually doing incredibly well.
Yeah, there's a touch of the Liverpools about them in terms of, I think, some of their games recently. They're kind of 1-2, little scrappy 1-2-0 wins. But, you know, I don't think there's any harm in that type of thing. It shows a different side to a team.
They remind me of as well is Liverpool from a couple of years back when they had Torres and they were massively reliant on him doing something. They still had good players in that team like Gerrard and all in behind, but if Torres wasn't going to score for them, they'd really struggle to see out games. And that seems to be the way Spurs are. They're not finishing teams off, they're leaving themselves open to comebacks a lot of the time. That game against West Ham was a dangerous old game for them for a long spell. So you get the feeling at some point this season it's not going to work out for them.
You mentioned City, and you know that you think they'd win the league by 8 or 9 points, and last year they got 100 points, 106 goals, records falling everywhere. So do you know that they're currently in line, based on the 26 goals they've scored already, they're on line to break their goals record from last season?
Really?
If they keep going at this rate, they're going to have 110, which is mad.
And I think they beat Burnley 5-0 last week, and I think every, you know, different goal scorer each time. And they have Kevin De Bruyne just coming back as well. Like, they're still a fairly frightening prospect.
That's a big thing for this game, I think, as well. I don't know if he starts this game, but he's been coming back a while now, so you would think he could potentially come in for this one. Spurs 100-30, the draw 29-10, and Man City are 3-4. I can't look. Maybe I'm leaning too much to the odds-on favourites this week, but I can't look too far past City. I think they'll
beat them. What you said
well.
Draw was?
The draw is 29-10.
Oh, I'd be leaning that way.
Do you think so? Yeah.
Yeah, like, how many shots on target do you think City's opposition have had this season in the 9 games?
I'm trying to recall who they've played. 9 games, you're probably going 2 or 3 shots a game at most, so it would have to be around.
What are you getting at, Shane?
27.
they've only faced 16 shots on target. That's all season good. In 9 games, which is crazy. They're just owning the games. They've only conceded 3 goals, just like Liverpool as well. So do you remember Mourinho's first season? 04-05, conceded 15 goals, and everyone was like, that is the benchmark for defensive solidity. At his current rate, they're going to concede just 13. Same as Liverpool, by the way, which is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you like a stat?
I do, yeah. No, I do. I'm just wondering where your logic for fancying the draw was going with this.
I just think it'll be a tight game because Spurs, even though they're not playing amazingly well or as free-flowing as they can, they're still doing well and getting results.
Can I give you another one just on that, then, if you're going to think along the lines of the draw? You get the double chance market with Spurs or draw 21-20, so still leaning odds against in a market like that. So just on the off chance thing,
I tell you, Pep came in, he came into the Premiership, and he's really, I'd say Mourinho's having nightmares, because he'd have got away with his management. I don't think the problems at United or his management, maybe a little bit prehistoric at this stage. Pep has really showed up and left him behind. There's no question doubt about it. And I think that's a big thing with Mourinho, and that's a lot of the pressure. In the same city, Pep is doing what he's doing with this team, and the United fans are looking at Mourinho doing with his squad what they're doing and the way they're playing. They're light years apart. It's incredible.
even though the net spend, I think, is like 290 million to 270 million. So City aren't miles ahead in terms of net spend.
The difference in the game, they're on a different planet.
They're like different
the way
species.
The games are being played. Unbelievable.
I think that's the one sort of thing that maybe Manchester United fans hold on to in terms of, you know, are they heading into a big long period of decline like Liverpool had been, you know, with, you know, a lot of players there that they can't shift because they're on such high money, blah, blah, blah. I think the one saving grace that Man United will always have is they're so rich and that will stand to them at some stage. Mm. You know, they have the money. They're not... They have money, you know.
They're a couple of defeats away from the bottom half of the table. I think they're on a knife edge, I really do. I mean, if you look at Juve the other night and the performance, but a couple more defeats and he has to go.
Mm. If you fancy City to win this in a tight game, City and under 3.5 goals is 15-8.
That's a good
So that's
price.
Not too bad. Yeah. If you think both teams will score and City to win, 21-10. But I have to say, I fancy the draw.
I tend to think with Spurs games, a lot of time you can write off the first game, particularly a big game, you can write off the first half as a draw. So I think something like draw Man City at 18-5 gives you a little bit of value. Mm. And on the first goal score front, if De Bruyne is back in there, 10-1 to mark his return. It's a big, big price, considering, as you said, they share the goals around quite a lot, so it could really be any of them. And just an interesting one I thought for Spurs. I mean, Lucas Moura's given them another dimension. City have struggled in the past at the back with some pace sometimes, not regularly as you flagged up there with no shots going in against them. That would be the way to get in behind them in some capacity there. Moura is about 11-1 to get the first goal in that.
Yeah, and speaking of goal scoring midfielders like De Bruyne, Frank Lampard this week goes back to Chelsea with Derby County. They knocked United out of the cup on penalties, the Carabao Cup. And Wednesday they go to Stamford Bridge. Do you think there's any hope that Lampard can get a win against his old team?
You'd have to give them some chance, wouldn't you, after beating United? It's the pretty relatively
underdogs.
Strong. Yeah, a relatively strong United team, but you'd have to give them a reasonable chance. It'll be a nice kind of thing to see because it won't be a case of him going there on the downward slope but when his managerial stock is at an all-time low. It'll be, you know, him returning on a relative high to see if he can do another bit of giant killing.
I've been listening to his interviews and... I think look at Gerrard himself. Okay, Terry's gone as number two in Aston Villa, but I think Lampard has actually been speaking very, very well. Okay, they're obviously looking at the bigger picture. To leave the media whole gig that they've left, particularly Gerrard speaking, I think he's actually picked a good side. Okay, a little bit inconsistent, going well, then a bad defeat. But he speaks well. I think he really knows what he's about as a manager. And the longevity of Lampard, I think we'll see it. He'll be there I think he's going to get a big club. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Chelsea down the line is the one he'd love, probably. But he doesn't really have to win. They'll give a good performance, play good football. I watched him a couple of times there this season. But I like what he's about and what he's saying. As Gerrard, I've been very impressed with Gerrard, except I think he's just a shit team up there. That's the bottom line, you know. Yeah.
Well, you look at Derby, fifth in the Championship, 2 points off the lead. Like that's a very unforgiving league. Mm. And people say, you know, learn your.
I think he's doing a very good job.
Yeah,
I have
you
to
know,
say.
People say start off at the bottom and work your way up. That is like to take on a job in the Championship as a rookie manager and to be doing well, admittedly only after 14 games or so, is quite something.
And at a club where there is a lot of pressure, because Derby have been the nearly men so often over the last couple of years, and they've tried a couple of, you know, relatively experienced and big-name managers as well.
We spoke to Richard Keogh, who I think might still be Derby County captain.
He is, yeah.
The Ireland defender. Yeah. And when the Irish team were in for those grim doubleheader games last month.
Denmark and Wales, great stuff, isn't it?
we were talking to Richard Keogh about Lampard, and obviously, as a key man in that Derby team, he's not going to sort of come out and pan his manager for no reason. But he spoke very, very well about Lampard and in terms of what he's doing, message he communicates. And of course he's going to say that because he plays for him, but you could actually tell it seemed very genuine. You know,
I can see it. I think he's one that will stay.
Hmm. I have the betting for this anyway. I think it, you know, could be subject to change because we're talking about this quite a bit before. Once the teams are out, Chelsea rest a few players. But 1-5 about Chelsea, 11-2 about the draw, 14-1 about Derby seems a little bit skewed for me. I don't think I'd be taking Chelsea or...
If Chelsea were to win well, or it's a high scoring game, Chelsea in over 2.5 goals is 4-6. Not too bad. Just that you mentioned the Championship table there. There's 6 points between the top 13 teams in that table.
Yeah, it's brilliant league.
What a crazy
league. It's absolutely
league.
Fantastic league.
Can I give you an interesting little market just as we're talking about the Championship? Who might well end back up there? Noticed an interesting market on the website there the other day. It's bottom on Christmas Day. So we're talking, we talked a little bit about Cardiff there. I mean, I was surprised to see we were nine games in. I kind of watched most of it, but nine games in and Newcastle have, what, 1 point or 2 points from a draw or something like that. So they're rock bottom. Newcastle to be bottom on Christmas Day are 9-2.
They have two draws so far.
Yeah, big, big price. Fulham aren't far off, 9-2. You've got Cardiff, 5-2. Again, Cardiff to be bottom on Christmas Day wouldn't be a crazy bet of 5-2. And Huddersfield then at 9-4. So just an interesting little market when you're talking about a lot of parts of the Premier League kind of sewn up in terms of the top of the table. But that one's still very, very competitive.
The we're heading for week 8 of the NFL, Bernard. I know you watch it closely. The big game this weekend, there's always big games in the NFL, and so many of them come down to the last quarter just being one score games. So, you know, you're all over that red zone, and it's great stuff on a Sunday. Green Bay Packers at the LA Rams this weekend should be really, really high scoring game. The Rams are 7-0 this season, undefeated. Like, if Todd Gurley is a running back, unbelievable. Jared Goff is on fire. They both could be MVPs. Great receivers there, Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp, and Robert Woods. Whereas you've got Aaron Rodgers at the other side. You could watch Aaron Rodgers play all day, couldn't you, Bernard?
Yeah, you could, but the one thing, he's been a little bit inconsistent at times. Gets sacked.
Is that because of his team, though?
It is his team, but the way he gets sacked, and the way it's the next play, what he can do. And I was just watching New York the other night, you know.
The Giants.
Yeah, the other, I know.
They're rubbish.
They're actually rubbish. I watched it, and to see their quarterback,
Eli Manning.
Manning, and the brother up in the box watching him, and they're talking beforehand, and the pressure. I think he's a problem for the likes of New York at the moment, but Rodgers is superb. But can I just say, I've got a few friends of mine genuinely watching the American football now, and as you said a few weeks ago, Shane, they're watching the game in its entirety.
Mm.
And I think they will, over a period of time, tighten up the length of the games and the breaks, and they're trying to do it over there. They have recognised it. Now, it's a money-making machine, as we all know. But tactically, the game, and I sit now, and a bit like you, in the last couple of weeks, I've watched full games.
Yeah.
And it's way better. Mm. Tactically, you know, the game of yards, the film, the whole, it is everything about that yard. It's amazing. Everything.
Even an inch.
Even an inch. Even an inch. But I just think tactically, when you get your head around it, it's a brilliant, brilliant game. I love it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it too. And I would watch a game or two games on a Sunday from start to finish.
Yeah.
But I don't, at any stage during the week, look for news on the NFL. I literally just watch the game. I'm familiar with good few of the players on each team, but I wouldn't, like, you know, you have a good healthy interest in it.
I'd be like you like that.
I don't go looking for the news, so. But I wonder what you're talking there about sort of tightening up games, how much of that is to do with sort of, you know, England now, you know, they're talking about having franchises in England. Yeah. Are they now tailoring American football for an English/European audience? And is that partly why they kind of realise that they have to maybe do these things, because they're talking about in X amount of years having a proper franchise. I hate that word.
Maybe anyway. In years to come, if there's a London franchise, you could take your wife to London and then make her go to NFL.
Just having a look at the money line on this. The Rams are 2-9. The Packers are 7-2. In terms of matchup, Shane, because I'd be, you know, pass by fan, I'd kind of tune in every now and again. Had a look at some stuff beforehand. Looks like Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Donald looks like the kind of main matchup, pass rusher versus quarterback. Is that going to be where this is won and lost? Or,
well, look, again, I mean, like, it's, I'm as a fan, so I wouldn't sort of suggest that I'm a great analyst of the game.
No,
but like, Aaron Donald,
you're the one that's real anti red zone. It's becoming Shane Stapleton's anti red zone podcast.
Well, like, Aaron Donald has 8 sacks in his last 4 games. So he's a real danger to quarterbacks. So he is going to be looking to rip Rodgers' head off. So the only thing is, at least Rodgers, very varied game. He's a clutch player, as they like to say over in America as well. And I have to say, one of his receivers, what a name this guy has. Equanimeous St. Brown. Equanimeous means calm and composed.
That's nice.
Only in America. Only in America. My tip for this game is over 56 points is 10-11. I think it's going to be really high scoring. Two great teams should be.
I think they're in shock over there at the finishes of some of the games this season, how tight they've been. And I would say Paul is touching on something there. The outside forces, or the outside neutral admirers of the game, I'd say it's gone through the roof over the last year to 2 years of American football, there's no doubt. And when you get your head around it, it is. But you know what's great? See the GAA or even rugby, and I think the rugby have probably, it's kicked in a little bit.
Yeah.
To see offensively the coaches, defensively the coaches. I think slowly the GAA, they're divining it up slightly. that they're sort of breaking it down in little pieces. And I think you can get a lot from specific coaches in specific areas. And I think that is creeping into the GA a little bit. And American football has taken the lead in that.
Mm. We'll move on to the horse racing now, because big weekend. There's plenty of races in Doncaster, Cheltenham, Aintree as well. I noticed Cheltenham have moved to ban ticket touts by seeking an injunction at the British High Court. How big of an issue is this, Declan?
I'd say like all sports, it's pretty big. Racing, it's probably harder to detect, isn't it? You're not gonna sell out race courses as often unless it's something as big as Cheltenham. Half the time around the year, it's not
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, well, no. But the same way, it wouldn't be weekly. It would be weekly in something like football or something like that, where you'd be stuck.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much on the race course, but obviously, look, they've moved to get this done pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's not a sort of a culture like sort of leading up to an All Ireland final where everyone's talking about, have you got a ticket? Have you got a ticket? Yeah. I know a fellow has a ticket. You'll generally just pay in at the races, apart from some.
Yeah, the races, you get dressed up like Conor McGregor and go box the heads off each other when you have a few too many gins in the big fishbowl.
I know rugby for you to have a dig at, so the red zone's done. You can tick off racing too.
Yeah. We start off with the race of the weekend at Doncaster, the 405 Futurity Stakes, the Grade 1. What do you like here?
I tell you what, you say the race of the weekend, that it is in terms of class, but the Jumps fans won't be happy with that. They'll be
well, I'm sticking to it.
It's on the flat, so we'll get the flat out of the way. We'll get on to the Jumps very shortly after. We're just updating prices on this one at the moment, but I'm looking at Magna Gracia top of the betting around about 13-8. You've got Turgenev 4-1, Phoenix of Spain 11-2, and 14-1 or bigger the rest. The notable thing is about this race, a few of them had supplemented the go here. The likes of Magna Gracia and the other one is Stormwave, who actually has been backed as well. So two of them clearly with this in mind. I'm going to go a bit further away from this, but I'm going to go with Phoenix of Spain, second to Too Darn Hot at Doncaster last time. Was two lengths ahead of the rest in behind. This is the first time this one's going over 1 mile. If you go back to his win at York back in August, I thought the 1 mile looked like it would suit nicely. Should go a little bit shorter than he currently is, about 11-2. I think Magna Gracia probably should win this, to be fair, but just at the prices at the moment, I'd probably be willing to take this one on.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I had a quick look at this as well, and quite like Phoenix of Spain. The horse that I did like was a horse called Kadar, but hasn't been declared. It was entered. It only run one race before and was being elevated straight up into Group 1 status, which I thought was quite interesting. And Stormwave as well was another one that crossed my mind, but I don't see it.
No, and that's declared. Weird after being supplemented as well, that it has been taken out. Exact same thing happened to me. I was about to blag on about Japan, who I really, really like, but there you go. We'll watch out for that one next time. Joy's a recording on a Thursday.
Yeah, and the 4:15 at Leopardstown. Airfield Stakes, not currently priced up, but you're interested in this one.
It's just one I wanted to give a brief mention on, because off the back of this one at Doncaster, you might see a couple of form clues from this. A few of those supposed to be running there at Leopardstown would have been in behind a couple of these, so you might get a handy form clue. There's one or two, I'm not sure if they actually have been declared. I haven't got it handy here, but Zanoon for Dermot Weld's in really good form, to be fair. This is an interesting two-year-old, well-bred enough. I thought he might find a few too good at this, but definitely one to watch going forward. But yeah, just keep an eye for the form clues for some of these in the race just after Doncaster.
It's another Dermot Weld horse, I think, entered in that race as well. Massaf, sort of shaped well. Group 2 race at Champions Weekend last month. Won at Leopardstown back in June as well. That could be well worth an eye if it's declared.
There you go. The Weld one too.
And Cheltenham, the 2:35.
Let's get onto it.
Yeah. We have a dream, hotly tipped. This is where you really want to wax lyrical, isn't it?
It is, and somehow I'm looking at the betting here at the moment. I'll have to double check this is right, because Redition is currently the market leader here at 13-8, so there must have been a plunge on this Redition. Then you've got We Have a Dream 15-8, so pile on if this isn't gone by the time this show is coming up. Gumball 3-1, 11-2 Style de Garde, and 9-1 or bigger the rest. I'm not sure what Paul, you want to dive into this one first, or
no? I'll leave that one be.
This one be. Well, We Have a Dream.
It all said there.
We Have a Dream. Notably, 20-1 for the Champion Hurdle as well. So we get a bit of a clue as we're looking ahead to Cheltenham in March. But this one, dual Grade 1 winner last year. A lot of people will be excited to see how We Have a Dream gets on here. He missed out on a run in the Triumph Hurdle last year, but all in all, was was fantastic. Still unbeaten at the moment. Gumball, who's third in the betting here, he beat him by 7 lengths last time out. Now he goes £8 higher for that, but I can't see him being beaten. I tried to have a look down, one or two maybe with a bit of each way value. Malaya for Paul Nichols. Radition, I'm really surprised this one's in there as a fav. Did get a run actually in the Triumph Hurdle. But was miles back in that occasion. He finished last season pretty poorly. Alan King, the trainer, blamed the ground at the time, but he ran a stinker at Chester. So for me, if you're taking that 13-8, you want your head examined a little bit there. I'd leave him to see what kind of runs he throws up first.
And 35 minutes later, then the 3:10. There's some familiar faces in the handicap chase.
There is. I'm actually going to go one that's a little bit less familiar. I'll give you the market here first of all. Actually, you've got the likes of Big Mart 7-2. Then Foxtail Hill 9-2. Modus is in here 11-2. 6-1. Duke of Navan and sevens are bigger. It's going to be Penny Jane for me for Gordon Elliott. He's really, really up on this one. I'm surprised this one is still as big as it is at the moment, 7-1. This one won at Galway after a bit of a nightmare run, a trouble in passage. The saddle then slipped. Jockey on the day did an absolutely brilliant job, Dennis O'Regan, but dropped to 2 miles last time. Again, 2 mile in this race ahead of them, so should be a nice little test. And Gordon Elliott, his stable review was out during the week there. And he talked this one up huge. He was delighted with it.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that as well. So I agree with Declan there. Yeah, Modus as well might be an interesting runner. JP's horse was last in the JLT in Cheltenham. The one won by Shattered Love. Had been in touch sort of in that race and made a mistake about 4 out or so and sort of dropped off fairly quickly, and then was last again in a small field in Aintree in a decent race a couple of months later, or a month or so later. Got fairly worked up at the start and wasn't particularly fluent, but sort of maybe a drop back in sort of standard here. Modus might be worth a small bet in that race. There's a Gordon Elliott horse, Dinos, who was entered in a couple of novice hurdles at Cheltenham, won tomorrow, Friday, but hasn't been declared. So I think it's going to run the 3 miler on Saturday.
Oh, lovely.
It's won 3 or 4 races, maybe sort of over the summer. And I think Gordon's sort of semi-sweetened that one as well. So Dinos, D-I-N-O-N-S.
And then entry on Sunday, 3:00, the old Roan Chase, Declan.
Yeah, actually, I'll just chuck one more in at Cheltenham. I didn't actually list it down, but I had a quick look before coming on. I think that Pertamps Network Handicap Hurdle, the 3:45, actually looks a pretty interesting one. And the Organist looks an excellent each-way bet here. Was fifth in a grade 3 at Cheltenham last time, and Oliver Sherwood is in unbelievably good form. He's 4 from 5 at the start of the season, so an 80% strike rate so far. So his runner's coming out hot. So if that one ends up going there, about 14-1 at the moment. And I think Moonracer might well be involved in that one, which will be interesting, seeing Moonracer in a 3 miler for the first time as well.
So Aintree down on Sunday.
Yeah, Aintree. Old Roan. Again, one of the standout runners, by the looks of it, will be Cloudy Dream. Looked close to kicking on at certain points last season. Probably a little bit frustrating all in all. I'll just get the prices up here actually while I'm at this. But yeah, looked a little bit frustrating all in all. He's moved to Don McCade's yard since, and looks, you know, for me, and I think Don said it himself actually, his runners tend to take a little bit of time. He takes a bit of time getting to know them, and getting to work out their best. So you can probably find a little bit of value in taking this one on once again. You've got a few coming in here, the likes of Theo, and if Theo runs here, that is, and Beggar's Wish, who are in relatively good form, but probably a little bit inexperienced at this level. I think the obvious one for me looks like Frodon for Paul Nichols. He's had a strong start to the season as well, about 30%. He's had a few more runners, 8 from 27. This one comes off top weight here, but I think all in all, just looks, if you look through his form, solid efforts every single time. And to be there at about 10-1 while the fav's about 4s, I should give you the prices for this actually. Cloudy Dream 4s, Modus 11-2, God's Own 13-2, Beggar's Wish then at 10s, as is Frodon, Javert, and a few more in there at 10s as well.
I was just looking at that race, not necessarily a tip, but I'm just interested if God's Own, it's entered, but whether God's Own actually runs in the race, we wait and see. But sort of time isn't necessarily on his side. No. He's a 10-year-old now. But he's like, you know, maybe better sort of as a spring horse, but really good form on its day. He was third in the Champion Chase at Cheltenham behind Altior and Min at a huge price, 40-1. And then he was third behind Altior again at Sandown, also in the spring, just after the Cheltenham Festival. He was miles off in that race, but he finished well. And, he's a class act on his day and owes nothing to nobody. So if he runs in this, a bit of a drop in standard in a handicap chase. But if God's Own runs, I'd be interested to see how that one fares.
Two of them actually relatively similar profiles as well, Frodon and God's Own, in terms of having gone close a number of races, maybe not dominating them, but certainly have the class to be there with some of the best. And I'd have a bit of a doubt that some of the rest of the field are actually. So good, solid bet each way on either of those, really.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the racing this weekend. We'll move on to the GA. The brawl culture continues, Bernard. We see the Dingle selector Colm Gainey got banned for 8 weeks after striking the East Kerry footballer Darragh Moynihan in Sunday's county semi-final replay. It's just the latest in a long line of brawls as well. Bernard, what's your take on it? Because I saw you tweeting about it. You were saying Dermot Connolly got 12 weeks for interfering with a sideline official, and a strike on a player coming in from the sideline hits a player 8 weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. It's no laughing matter, Shane. It really isn't for anybody. But I think the times we're in social media, whatever. There's a couple of different things I think here, and I was listening to Ciara Kelly's show yesterday at full length, and it was a very good piece, and somebody phoned in that obviously knows the Kerry official or mentor, a backroom staff. There is absolutely no excuse. Two players going at it on a field and staring each other down is one thing, and it has happened for 30, 40 years, whatever. That's one thing. But to come in from the sideline as a mentor and blindside hit somebody, and you can be the nicest guy in the world, it could be me in the sideline, there is absolutely no excuse. And the problem here was what was dished out to that guy from Dingle. I'm not going to mention names here, there's no point, we all know you've mentioned him, and that's enough. But to give 8 weeks to that person that committed that atrocious act on the field, and I feel that strongly, that is different than what takes place on the field between two players. And if he'd have got 6 or 12 months, I don't think we'd have anything quite like it now. But the 6 or 12 months cannot be enforced on this guy.
No, because the rules are there.
No, it can't be enforced. But even if he gets suspended, he goes to games. Who's going to stop him going to games? For something like that, the club has to suffer badly. And I'm not... I took belts, I gave belts and all this. I woke up in hospital with blindsided belts 5 or 6 times in an ambulance, stuff like that. It happened, it was shocking. The second thing is blindsided shots. Dirty, bad, cowardly blindsided shots have to be dealt with suspensions. And start dealing with the thing properly. And thirdly, the social media now with the GA. If we look at the ones we've seen, and they've been in Cork, they've been up in Tyrone, they've been Kerry, I've seen in Westmeath a couple of times, and yet you look at even Tyrone, whatever it may be. There's so many of them now, they're caught all on camera in some shape or form, and they're up there for everyone to see.
And they should be.
And they should be, Shane. Absolutely not. But there's nothing worse, and I just seem, I'm not going to go in dwell at all. My own young lad got blindsided this year in the semi-final, split badly open, looking at the ball in the air and pulled from behind, got stitched down and could have lost an eye or a jaw, broken in pieces, whatever. Do I get overly unfussed about that? No, I don't. It's part of the game, the way we grew up and all that. But we're living in different times. And I'll tell you, there is no place for what's going on. I watched up and down players climbing fences and having two teams and supporters beating the shit out of each other away from the field. That is barbaric. And I'll tell you, it's shocking, Shane.
Yeah, as is, like, having these mentors on the sidelines so close to the action is absolutely... It's silly. It's an accident waiting to happen. We've seen it with, obviously, this case with down in Kerry.
I watched it 3 times, that incident in Kerry. But the amount of people on the line, Shane, is chronic. Oh, it's scandalous.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I even know just from my own experiences on the pitch, back in 2011, I was playing a match, and myself and the guy that I was marking, we weren't getting on great. And he hit me twice in 2 separate incidents. And the second time I said, look, if you do that again, you know, I'm going to react. So he did it again, and I drew across him. And, you know, we both should have got red cards, basically, but the ref didn't see it. But then their whole sideline came running in at me. We were playing away from home. And I was putting out my arms to hold back guys, and I had 3 or 4 of them pulling out of me. And their mentor stuck his hand in over and pulled the face guard clean off me as well. Now, nothing happened. I was fine. We played on. The solution was me and the wing forward, I was marking, swapping sides, and we kind of laughed at the end of the game. But you're not far off from a very serious incident, you know, finger in through the eye, whatever it could be. But having these guys on the sideline so close to the action is absolutely It's ridiculous. And I think the more video footage out there, the better. Shame people into copping on and kind of sort of push the GAA, induce them into being more strict on sideline regulations.
I'd have to say, overall, in the one incident is too many. I wouldn't condone one of them. Mm. Yes, it's a physical sport, and at the club scene, at the, there is no real issue at county level. There's not. It doesn't happen. When is the last bad belt like anthem we've seen at club level? It doesn't really happen too much. You look at Dermot Connolly, what he got for 12
Ray Boyne
weeks.
Had an altercation with Tommy Freeman about 10 years ago. But like,
but overall, Shane, they don't really happen at county level because there's respect and there's boundaries, and you are destroyed if you do it. You will get penalised accordingly. The club level, there's a number of issues. Mm. And I feel so strongly in this, and I think it's a very good point and topic you brought up. It's that serious right now. County boards, the onus on them, they're a big problem. They brush things under the carpet. To give that man 8 weeks was totally unfair in him and his family. And he's hung out to dry, and rightly so. You cannot come on a field. And I watched it. And to hit a guy, a player like that, as an official or a mentor, is scandalous. And only to get 8 weeks for it is shocking. And I'm appalled by it. I am. But what is the county board? Did a chance to make an example. They didn't do it.
But the rule book did kind of tie their hands.
And it's wrong. We've got to change them.
Yeah, for sure.
Look, it's a scandal, right? But here's a couple of things. The standard of refereeing, is a problem. Young lads and gyms and all of this, and maybe some of them on creatine and different things and all that, there seems to be, at the moment, one thing that no one has touched on. I can tell you now, I've been involved. And I can see it. The win at all cost mentality, now at club level, is beyond a joke. I'm very, very serious, and this is an important point. The win at all cost at club level now at the moment has got to a level, it's actually a problem in the club scene.
And you talk about more than just like marking guys out.
Oh,
the game,
I'm telling you, it's win at all cost. I do believe that, yes. And to win now at club level, and the pressure, which never, the club was there to be enjoyed, you did your best over the years, but whether you won or not, you could still enjoy the club scene, what was about, and the fruits of that, the social end of it, the club's friendships and everything else down the line. It is quite serious, and I witnessed it last Sunday in a town final for the first time.
Yeah, well, you had a great day, to be fair. Your son Billy won a county final.
Absolutely brilliant. But I'll tell you, at times, and I seen the two sets of players on Monday night when they came together in the one pub.
Oh, did they?
You know, just by accident, right? I'm just saying, honest, I was there and I didn't leave and I watched it closely. It is that serious. And it's not just there, it's another up in Tyrone and Kerry and different places. But there are things that are happening now. The J at the top table have to grab this bit of scruff of the neck. The J as an association is amazing. What it does for young kids is incredible. There's too much good. Kira Kelly said it yesterday. It's way better than this, it's above this, and the product is better. They are isolated instances, and there are too many, but they have to be cut in the butt by changing the rules, as you say. But I'll tell you what, if somebody continues to do this, the book has to be thrown to some guy. There's somebody going to be actually killed. One box, I've seen some of the hits. I know my own lad got one. If it's got in the right, wrong place, the strength of these guys hitting a punch today could kill a guy. But as well as that, you know, you have to penalise guys accordingly. And I just think the guy in Kerry and Dingle, he'll get 8 weeks, is the worst thing that could happen to him in the club. And the county board, with the rules, they should have thrown the book. I know the rules were there, but it is scandalous with some of the stuff that's going on. It's appalling.
Like, to me, kind of like I am a GAA fan, but I'm looking at it from the outside in. Like, there seems to be an acceptance, and there always has been, an acceptance of players fighting on a pitch if it happens, right? I can only relate it to football, soccer, because that's what I cover work-wise. But if that happens if it happens in the crowd, which, you know, tends to happen more so at soccer matches, and I'm thinking League of Ireland, or I'm thinking maybe English football, there seems to be, say Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians games.
And they segregate them for that reason.
Segregate them, but there have been incidents where Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians fan trouble has made back pages of newspapers, more so than any reason for having a League of Ireland story on the back page. It was for violence, you know. And yet, to me, GA matches, punch-ups, brawls are just you know,
this did make the front page of one of the.
No, I appreciate that, yeah. But to me, what gets done about it? Nothing seems to get
Paul
done about
touched.
It.
There is an acceptance that's it's an totally acceptance, unhealthy,
an acceptance
and it's wrong.
That you know everyone jumps up and down about it for a few weeks and then just move on again.
In terms of what you said, that making front page news, is that surprising? Because as Paul says, it does seem to be accepted. Say there was an incident in the NBA there recently, we probably all would have seen that online, yeah. Where two of them were boxing heads and it was
Rondo
hugely...
and Chris Paul.
Yeah, it was huge, like huge, huge news that was. But this doesn't seem to have that same thing. It doesn't have that. It's not huge news.
Is it because like GA is who we are and salt to the earth and all
yeah,
this kind
suck
of thing?
It up and just get on with it. You know?
Whereas soccer is a garrison game and therefore that is the antithesis of what we actually are. So we're taking the opportunity to slam soccer anytime it puts a foot out of line. Maybe it is. I think we're afraid to, like, GA is the fabric of our society in the vast majority of parishes. If GA wasn't there, there'd actually be nothing left in the town. Mm. Like my hometown of Bursley in County Tipperary, 5 All-Ireland winning hurling captains. Hurling is the town. And like, if you think of a lot of small towns over the years, so they've either been bypassed by big roads, the post offices are closed, the banks are closed, Tesco has opened up somewhere nearby, so all the mammy and daddy shops are closed, pubs are closing down. So what's really holding together these small rural towns? And it is kind of that GAA thing. So if you start threatening the identity of the GAA or rubbish, yeah. I think people are so protective over GAA that is part of it.
But I think they're crying out, Shane, for a bit of help and change. And they're crying out for something by the governing body, rules at club level to be changed, yeah. All that. But there has to be a culture change. I don't want to go to handbags or anything like that at all. And I'm not being... I'm being honest when I say on 7 or 8 times I woke up in ambulances from bad belts or concussion and bad blows, and it did happen to me. You're nearly afraid to open your mouth. That is not right either. But in this day and age, when things have changed, and you don't have to clean up the physicality of an honest game,
sure, yeah.
But the tuggery and the assaults that are taking place, the guy that rang in yesterday on the show. The rugby guy that's went to 2 games down, I think it's down in Kerry. The way he played senior rugby, the way he spoke, I thought he was magnificent. I don't know the man. I think it was Stephen, he gave his first name, Kira Kelly Show. He said he'll never go again and it's tuggery and it's appalling. Look at rugby, the biggest hits, probably the greatest gladiators and honest men I honestly know, and the discipline that's within the sport. And in soccer, if it wouldn't be accepted, Paul, and you're right, and in rugby, but I do think we need to clean it up. It's very, very dangerous. When it starts, the culture everyone is in, and some of the scenes I've seen is dreadful because it's the blindsided shot. Someone is going to get badly done, and the GA,
yeah.
At the top level, that's the most urgent thing now. They're talking about new rules coming in.
I think they'll have to.
Shane, they have to. It's unbelievable. I cannot see it.
I think it's the acceptance that people just accept.
And I'm not saying this, but something has to be done at club level, Shane.
Mm.
At all levels, with the standard of refereeing, it is unacceptable to think it's okay to throw guys out refereeing matches that are not capable of doing it and have not done the proper, I'm telling you, that are not ticking boxes. That is a huge thing as well.
They have to have a cordoned off area where this, you know, a technical area
absolutely.
Like in soccer, that's where you can have your manager and that's it. Everyone else has to be this far back. And there's, even if it's just a rope to keep people back, symbolic enough, but at least people know, go past that and you're booted out. Anyway, we should actually talk about some of the games going on this weekend. Your son won a county final. Paul has to say goodbye.
Yes,
Paul,
sorry, lads.
Great to have you.
Sorry,
I know you love previewing club action,
yeah,
but
no,
look,
no,
hey,
sorry,
we'll
lads,
get you again next week.
I have to say, I'm absolutely furious. I only just thought of to ask Paul about the Bowes away jersey.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
sure, on social media.
Bob, but you know what, right?
Have you got one yet?
No, well, I'm not a Bowes fan. quite the opposite. But anyway, that would be telling too much.
It's class jersey.
Yeah,
it's going to sell loads.
It's going to sell loads. I like there was a whole load of people jumping up and down, right, about the jersey and how radical it was. Personally, I don't like it. I just don't like the look of it. I think it makes a good T-shirt. I don't think it necessarily makes a good jersey. But I think anybody who's like, oh, I like it, I don't like it, I hate it, that's kind of missing the point. It is a genius marketing strategy by Bose. Sports Illustrated were writing about it the other day. It has literally gone global. But there are rumblings, and the club so far have denied it, but there are rumblings, and I believe there's some truth to it, that the Bob Marley estate are not best pleased.
But if it's a drawing rather than a photograph.
Yeah. They've claimed it's a Rastafarian. Well, I think it was Daniel Lambert was on 2FM and he claimed it's not Bob Marley. It's a likeness. A Rastafarian man.
It doesn't fully look like him.
Well, they have about a 40-foot mural of Bob Marley inside Dalyman Park beside a 40-foot mural of Phil Lynott. And I think it's a little bit of a coincidence. All right, yeah.
Right, Paul. We'll see
Cheers,
you again.
Lads, thanks.
So onto the club action then. Last weekend, your son Billy won a county title with Mullingar Shamrock, stopped the 4 in a row for St. Lomond, so absolutely brilliant, and congratulations to the family. We do want to press on to people who can win county titles this weekend, and one person who can win too is Ross O'Carroll for Kilmacud Crokes. They drew with Ballyboden last weekend in the hurling final, went to extra time, really exciting stuff. Maybe the conditions probably wasn't as free-flowing as either team hoped. They probably didn't play their best hurling. But no team has actually won the double since 2009, which was Ballyboden. And before that, no team had done it since Vincent's in 81. So for Ross Carroll to win two in 2 days, because Sunday's the replay, Monday's the football final. So Crokes Ballyboden and then Crokes Jude's as well. That would be outrageous, wouldn't it?
It would be outrageous. And just on a more positive note with the club scene, some of the matches... And the crowds at the club games this year are way up, genuinely. And there is so much good. Think of Ross O'Carroll winning a double and not opening his mouth, having to play consecutive days, whatever. Fantastic for the club. But the crowds, 6,000 in Mullingar, 8,500 in Cavan, I think 9,000 down at Mayo last weekend, the club finals. There's so much good. And to see the celebrations last week, or anyone that achieves and does what they do and win something at club level, it is everything that we're about. But
nothing like it.
Nothing like it, Shane. There's nothing. I spent Monday and a day like it, and Sunday. Lomonds were great to beat them and turn them over. It was just amazing. But I'd say that I just think Kilmacud Crokes and the football are probably the biggest certainties this weekend. I know you mightn't fully agree with me against Jude's. Can Jude's do this for a third time against a big team? I'm not so sure.
In terms of the betting, it wouldn't really reflect that. They're 4-6, which isn't, a nailed on odds on price. Mm. Still a fairly, solid odds on favour price. 13-2 about the draw then, and 13-8 St. Judas.
If people want sort of reference point for players that are out there, Kilmacud Crokes have Paul Mannion, mm-hmm. Keane O'Sullivan, Pat Burke, who played for both Dublin and Clare for a time as well. Craig Diaz, who was briefly in with the Dublin team around 2011-12 mm-hmm. that time. Kevin McManaman and Niall Coakley, who formerly is of Cork, playing for St. Jude's as well. Really big physical team. Wiped the floor with St. Vincent's in the semi-final, who didn't start Dear McConnelly, who'd been away for the summer. Mistake?
No, they couldn't start him, in my opinion, honestly. Yeah.
You want to start him, but you know you can't. But if you want your best 15 players in the field,
but by all accounts,
it's impossible for the management.
Yeah, but he excelled in Boston. He got 12 points in the final, but the difference in that level, and I believe he's not quite match fit to do what Dermot Connolly did for Vincent's at his pomp. There's no question about it. And you could see that in his fitness levels. And didn't have a huge impact when he did come on, to be fair. I have to say, nailed to anybody listening, Kilmacud in the football 4-6 is money in the bank.
I don't know. But I'm glad you put your neck on the block. That shows a little bit of something there. Crokes and Ballyboden in the hurling then. So it was 2:17-1:20.
Brilliant game, I believe, Shane, by all accounts.
Yeah, it was really exciting, more so than the most flowing game ever, because both teams are defensively so strong. Anthony Daly against Joe Fortune. Daly over Crokes this year, the first time. And Fortune, actually, in his first season. So, you're going to have a clash of two big men, Ross O'Carroll and Conal Keeney again. I thought it was interesting, Conor Dooley, who was previously the Dublin goalkeeper the year before last, playing centre-forward on Ryan O'Dwyer. Shane Durkin and Ryan O'Dwyer ended up being sweepers at opposite ends of the field, getting on plenty of the ball at different times. You had Lorcan McMullen, the down man, playing midfield for Crokes, getting a few scores. Niall McMorrow's got that touch of class in midfield for Bowden as well. Just really, Paul Ryan had a chance to win it at the end, got hooked. Just really, really exciting stuff. And I was writing down what was my tip, and I don't have a tip for this. It's just a flip of a coin.
Again, betting reflects that even money, either side with the draw at 15-2.
Yeah. There's an exciting... double bill in Nolan Park this weekend. Ballyhale are playing Bennett's Bridge in the senior final. But what I'm interested for, sort of a retro feel, is the intermediate county final between Tullerone and Craig Ballycallan. So it's Tommy Walsh against Eddie Brennan. Hard to beat that. What a throwback.
I've seen that in the papers. It's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? It's something else.
Yeah. And Craig Ballycallan were in an All-Ireland final, was it 17 years ago as well? They won Leinster in senior. Pádraig Walsh playing for Tullerone, I reckon he'll be the difference here.
Don't forget Big Henry as well. King Henry.
He's manager of Ballyhale. That's right. But just for the prices on that, Tullerone 4-9, 8-1 the draw, and 9-4. Ballyhale against Bennett's Bridge. So it's the team that have regularly won championships and all Ireland's even against Bennett's Bridge, who haven't been in the final since 1974. Declan, what's the prices here?
You're looking at 4-9 Ballyhale, 8-1 the draw, and 9-4 about Bennett's Bridge.
Do you know that TJ Reid was taken off the frieze in their semi-final? So they beat Dixborough, who were the champions in the quarterfinals. He scored just a point from three penalties. Colin Fennelly won all three penalties in the first half. Then they beat Castlecombe, or otherwise known as Erin's Own, with 14 men after shooting 16 wides. And TJ Reid was taken off the frieze later on. He apparently missed one in front of the goals from the 45. Very unlike him. And look, there's a fair chance he'll go to town in this final. But just looking at the Bennett's Bridge team, who beat Mullinavat, and then Clara, who won two or three championships a couple of years ago. The first final in 44 years. The few good players, Sean Morrissey hit 2-5 in the semi-final. Liam Blanchfield, who we've regularly seen in a Kilkenny shirt. Also Jason Clear, who was briefly centre-back under Cody there last year. And Rob Lennon the same as well. So some decent players there. I think the 4-9 in Ballyhale might be just a little bit tight, considering that Castlecomer possibly should have beaten Ballyhale. But you'd still fancy Shefflin's men to get through that one. And then the final game I wanted to look at in the hurling. Now, I know you want to talk football as well, Bernard. Napiershig against Doon, 7:30 Saturday, down in the Gaelic grounds. Napiershig, I've played against them. They're basically like an intercounty team. They're a fantastic team as well. They beat Kilmallock in the semi-final. It's their seventh Limerick final in 10 seasons, whereas Doon haven't been there in 18 years as well. So what sort of value are you looking at here, if
yeah,
any?
Yeah, not much at all. 2-7 to Piercy, 10-1 the draw, and 3-1 about Doon.
Yeah, well, Doon beat Patrick's well, who have Keane Lynch, Dermot Burns, Aaron Gillan in the semi-final, sneaked over him by a point. They've got Pat Ryan, who people will know, the guy who came on and scored that sort of spooned goal against Cork in the semi-final, really pacey to attacker. Darrow O'Donovan, the sort of Pirlo-esque midfielder. Barry Murphy's an attacker who scored a goal against Tip this year. And Richie English, who is your archetypal battling defender as well. So I think it'll be closer than 2-7 for Napiercig suggests, but that experience always just counts big in these sort of finals. You wanted to look at the football. Mullingar Shamrocks, the journey continues against Moorfield, the Leinster champions this weekend. Do you give your men any chance?
What's the odds?
Yeah, I'm scrabbling about here. I don't have them handy for
no,
you.
No, but what I'd say is...
I have them here, I think.
It's a big ask, Shane. It's a big ask. The only thing is that they were allowed Monday, but back training Tuesday night. And just for Ned Moore, one of the greatest stalwarts our club has ever seen, for him to come back and manage his own club. And we've had a difficult couple of years. It was amazing for him, and what a tribute. He's got them focused. They weren't allowed out Tuesday night or anything like that at all. They've trained. So the last time they won the championship, they were very poor against Ballymun after it. So I'd say a sense of pride and deliver a good performance. Moorfield are on a different level than we are at the moment, but you never know. And you might have a bet.
Home advantage will help.
It'll help. It will help. It's a big difference at a club like Mullingar Shamrocks. What is the betting on that one?
The prices aren't up just yet, but we thought that it would tug on the heartstrings bringing that up for you.
Oh, it would, yeah. It's an interest. I think, you know, Moorfield, see what they did last year. The only thing is Lomans were 6 points up last year, should have closed it out, beaten by a point in extra time. 6 points going into extra time, should have closed it out. But Moorfield, I think, are so strong on the bench. The amount of players they have, but the way they're coached, the way they're drilled, Sweeney having a huge influence there. Jack O'Connor's son, the O'Connors, all involved. A lot of Kildare players. We'll get it very hard to beat them, but at home, you never know. But our guys will give a good account of themselves.
Leinster is poor. Leinster is poor. I'll name out the teams that are in there. And when I say poor,
Port
I
Leash,
mean, let's talk about Cara Finn. Let's talk about, you know, Nemo, Crokes, Schlockneil,
different level, yeah,
who are gone. But it's the level in previous years. So you're talking about Shamaliers, Dunboyne, your Shamrocks, Moorfield, Ratneu and Roath. I mean, none of those teams are going to win in All-Ireland. So I think if Shamrocks can cause a shock here, the Leinster title is on. So you might have a few more Monday sessions to
participate. I was just watching a bit, but the only thing, that it's only when you forget, and I won four in a row with the club. But
oh, Jesus, we had to drag that out of you.
The Monday afterwards when players get together is fantastic. And to see the joy and the celebration and the work that's been done in our own club, a lot of new people involved and the energy, and we just need to clean the club scene up to justify and warrant the work that's been done at all levels in the club scene, yeah, because it outweighs all the negative stuff. And just if the Croke Park and the county board sort of act out and get their act together, the GAA at club level is still the best gig in town.
Right, bets of the week. Declan, is there anything that sticks out to you?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure out, just as we're finishing up here, why we have a Dreams Drifting and Redition is shortening up. There seems to be a bit of support coming in, so maybe I'll come out here and I'll find out one of them won't run or something like that. But we have a Dream, to me, looked a really, really obvious one for this. I wouldn't go near Redition if the two run. And apart from that, I mentioned Gordon Elliott's one there earlier, Penny Jane, in that 3:10. I think two of them look really, really good bets for the weekend.
Bernard, anything stick out to you?
I'm just going to go on to soccer. 13-5 Arsenal to nil, I think, is a very, very good bet.
Yep.
I just like Barca and Real. I think close to 3-1, just under 3-1, is Barca and Real a draw. But I think it's a great little double in the GA this weekend. This is my third one.
Yep.
I think a double for Kilmacud to win the football at 4-6, but throw that in a double with Ballyhale to win the hurling 4-9. I think that's a gilt edge double. Going to list to our listeners, my bet of the weekend is Kilmacud in the football and Ballyhale in the hurling. A lovely double. You'll connect the next few, Bob. Yeah.
Liverpool in over 3.5 goals against Cardiff is evens. I think that's not so bad. Man City in under 3.5 goals is 15-8 against Spurs. And Green Bay Packers and LA Rams, for there to be over 56 points, is 10-11.
Brilliant.
So seeing as Paul's not here, we might have to give one in for him. Massively recommend the Bose top, I'd say.
Right.
From his point of view.
Okay. Well,
I got a little whisper as well for Penny Jane, 7-1. I think that I hear it from Elliot's side of the country. that could be one for our listeners to have a punt on.
Right. We've it all said. So, lads, from Paul in absentia, from Bernard, from Declan, from myself, you can follow us on iTunes and Spotify, and we'll see you all next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.